Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, welcome to BT Sport's new podcast, Life's a Pitch. My name's Mike Calvin, and I'm joined by Tony Evans and Adrian Clark. It's a packed show with many questions to consider. Can Leicester actually do it? Have Spurs and Arsenal blown it? How about Man United and Liverpool? Their seasons are on the line in the Europa League. Who's going down? Can West Ham win the FA Cup? And what about Chelsea? Can they survive in the Champions League? First things first, though, Leicester. Adrian, pressure? What pressure?
Well, they're coping so well, aren't they? Claudio Ranieri, I think, deserves massive credit for just keeping everybody calm inside that dressing room. And they are sticking to their philosophy. They're not changing things up. I think they know that they have something that works there in terms of their shape. Every player knows their job inside out. And they are just executing the same game plan week in, week out. And nobody seems able to stop them. I am so impressed by their play, but also by their temperament, which we all thought they would crumble, didn't we? But they've seen off the best sides already.
Yeah. But to be fair, no one's putting them under any pressure. Why should they care? No one's catching them up. No one's, you know, people are losing games. I mean, last week they draw and they, you know, three teams behind them are playing the next night and they all lose. You know, if you're Leicester, it's just perfect.
What about Ranieri? You know, is he basically perpetrating a great con trick on us all? You know, he loves the sort of clownishness and the bumbling granddad. But actually, he's one heck of a coach and he's got a hell of a background.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, there's a core of steel, you know, under the surface with Ranieri. And at the beginning of the season, the players got together and they said, don't change so much. I think they're a bit scared by the old Tinkerman reputation. But you know what? If he does tinker, what he does is he tinkers during games and he just makes subtle changes which can nullify the opposition.
Look, and two changes at half-time at Watford, for instance.
Well, exactly. And you know, and he's very, very clever. In Italy, the coaches there are really... They're more obsessed with making changes during the game and they really glory in it and they boast about it afterwards. And he comes from that tradition. And he's got Leicester set up in the best way for that squad, but also he can adapt. Say they're not huge changes, but little things, and they're making the difference.
Just little touches, aren't they? They're always a similar type of change. If plan A isn't working with Okazaki, for example, as Joa comes in and mixes things up, he's got options in the wide areas too. You've got King, who's a good backup for Conte or Drinkwater. It's just all fitting into place, and it proves you do not need a massive squad to compete in the Premier League.
Well, especially if you've got players like Mahrez, for instance, you know, player of the year candidate, you know, by all consent, basically. Yeah. Barcelona meant to be interested in it. When you've got that sort of speculation going on, something special is happening, isn't it?
Definitely. They've got the teamwork. They've got the framework. They've also got real match winners. We know all about Vardy, but Mahrez, I mean, what a talent he is. You wouldn't want to mark him, that's for sure. If you're a defender, do you go inside with him? Do you show him down the line? Do you show him inside? There is no safe place with Riyad Mahrez when he's got the ball because he can score good goals and he can also pop up inside the back box for a tap-in and he makes them too. I mean, he's class.
Let's look at forward a little bit. Last game of the season, Leicester are at Chelsea. How about Ranieri winning the title at Stamford Bridge?
Well, yeah, he was the first man sacked by Roman Abramovich when he bought the club. And then later on, Jose Mourinho scoffed at him and said he didn't have a winning mentality. Imagine him picking up that trophy there at the Bridge. And I'll tell you what, there'd be quite a few Chelsea players who'd want them to thrust Mourinho's words down the Portuguese's throat.
Yeah. Well, imagine that, guard of honour from Chelsea for Ranieri and his team at Stamford Bridge.
There'd be some national their teeth up there in the owner's box.
Talking of gnashing your teeth, Spurs and Arsenal, we were both there, Tony, weren't we? I know you were doing the commentary on it, Adrian. Great game.
Yeah.
Wrong result for both teams, wasn't it?
It wasn't great for either side in the end. I think Arsenal were happier by the time the final whistle blew because they showed character, spirit. But from a Spurs perspective, I think they had a really good 10 minutes. But the rest of the game, I thought Arsenal coped pretty well with what they had. They looked a bit tired to me. I thought they were labouring a touch and they didn't have that many answers. With Arsenal shutting off that space in front of the back four really well with Coquelin and Elneny, it nullified a lot of the Spurs' threat, but I suppose you've got to also give them credit. When Arsenal were weak and when they were rattled by that red card, they took full advantage. And Harry Kane, I mean, wow, what a goal.
Fantastic, wasn't it? But what about this whole idea of burnout, the burnout factor? We spoke to Pochettino afterwards and he was talking about how crazy it was. I think unbelievable was his phrase. Someone like Dele Alli, 43 games this season. He's carrying two separate injuries. That tells you what the problems are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, didn't you see it coming, Mauricio? You know, didn't you have a look at the fixture list and go, yo, you know, what does he think he was going to do? Get them all arrested this time of year? You know, the fact is, his training methods are really rigorous. He had them doing two-a-day sessions, you know, up until early February. And, you know, his teams traditionally have dropped off towards the end of the season. And to me, you've got to start nursing people after Christmas, nursing them along, and let the momentum of the games keep the fitness up. Mm. You know, I mean, everyone has loved Tottenham's press and their approach, but, you know, they just looked tired mentally and physically last week against West Ham and against Arsenal.
Very real danger of burnout. Because, look, as a player, I remember it. It's a long time ago for me now, unfortunately. But I do remember the double sessions, and it is hard because you have a little break, you go back out, and it's actually you can pick up niggles and injuries by having the break and starting again. So it's always a little bit risky. I think it works till about November time. And then when the games are coming thick and fast from December onwards, you do not need double set. You just don't need them. And I think it could end up catching up with Spurs in this run-in. The signs are there. They weren't very good at West Ham. I think Arsenal 11v11 would have beaten them. So, and they've got some tricky fixtures. So I can see Spurs tailing off now.
You've got the Europa League, haven't you? Now, actually, that's a competition which has come into its own. You know, we'll talk about Man United and Liverpool later. Spurs have got a great tie against Dortmund, but do they need it?
Oh, they could do without it. You know, if they're going to win the title, then they could probably live without this. I mean, you know, it's going to be two difficult games, you know, against a good Dortmund side. Yeah. And
Well against Bayern at the weekend, didn't they? 0-0.
Yeah, and, you know, Pochettino hasn't got that big a squad, and he's going to have to try and mix and match it and get them through. I mean, against Fiorentina, he plays with a false nine because Harry Kane was out. You know, they may go the same way again. But, you know, there's a Champions League. Well, they'll be in the Champions League anyway. But, you know, it's Tottenham's chances of winning things are narrowing down very quickly.
They are, but I think it's a great. It's what you're in football for these kind of games.
It'd be a great
experience. I know they're tired. I know they've had a lot of games. But to play at Borussia Dortmund over two legs, if they compete, if they do well, it could give them a little bit of a jolt ahead of the run-in. It could reinvigorate them to some extent because it's like, hang on, we've just beaten Borussia Dortmund. They're a class side. We can go on and win this Premier League.
Best grounds in the world there, the atmosphere.
Great tie.
What about the defence? I know it's very unfashionable to talk about defenders, but, you know, if you look at what's so. Leicester, for instance, you know, someone like Wes Morgan has been fantastic for them, played non-stop for about 2 years. What about Tottenham? How much are they missing Vertonghen?
I think they've missed him a little bit, but Wimmer has come in and looked excellent, I think, alongside Alderweireld, who I do believe has been the Premier League's best defender this season. I think he's been just tremendous, really. Hardly put a foot wrong. The centre-backs have a very important role at Tottenham, actually. They're crucial because the full-backs, as we know, love to fly forward. And I actually felt that Arsenal exposed a slight flaw in Tottenham's defence at the weekend with Danny Welbeck spinning into the channels down the sides. If you've got a quickie like that, it can really hurt teams when the full-backs are bombing on. So between now and the end of the season, Wimmer and Alderweireld have got a real big job on their hands.
Wimmer was asleep on the equaliser.
Yes.
He didn't hold the line, and he was just give Sanchez a little cushion to run into.
Tell you what happened on there. If you look at Barcelona, the chance they had, I think Suarez against Arsenal, it's manipulating the new offside rules, and more strikers are doing this. As teams push out, the strikers are staying in an offside position, and then as the ball gets recycled, because they're not active, they can't be flagged, they're the wrong side. And that was what happened. Alexis got the wrong side of Vimmer, and he punished him. So that, I think, is a little nuance that coaches, they're learning as they go along with this new rule. And watch out for that moving forwards, because I think defences need to wise up to it.
Yeah, you mentioned Welbeck. I thought he was a really good advert for someone coming in late in the season, rested, urgent.
Yeah, loads of pace. Every time Arsenal knocked the ball long, which is most un-Arsenal-like, you know, he was running, he was stretching the back four, he was running the channels, and it was fantastic. You know, I thought he just made a huge difference and gave Arsenal that, hit them on the break, potency.
Arsene Wenger's got a lot of stick for various tactical stubbornness, I guess. But in this situation, I think it was perfect because he knew it wasn't a game for tippy-tappy football. He knew that we would need to be solid in front of the back four, so he picked El Nini and Coquelin, and then we need to spring fast transitions. And it was perfect to have those two sit and Welbeck looking to stretch it. It just worked perfectly against Spurs. And I think Arsenal might have found themselves a formula that will stand them in good stead for those tricky away games at West Ham, at Everton and at Man City. I see that axis of El Nini and Coquelin and Welbeck maybe playing in all those games.
And I'll tell you what, when they brought Giroud on with a quarter of an hour to go, he really disrupted Tottenham. He sat a little bit deeper in that midfield and caused havoc.
Don't get used to it. He'll never pick two strikers too often.
What about the FA Cup in the context of their season? You know, they're playing at Hull in the replay that probably neither team really wanted.
Well, they didn't want the replay, but Arsenal want to win the FA Cup. They want to make history. They want to win it three times in a row. It's not ideal, but they've got a great chance. You would fancy them against Hull, and you fancy them at home to a Watford side that are stuttering.
Well, it's the madness of modern football. Hull play a weakened team at home because they've got their eye on the Premier League and next year's television deal. FA Cup, you know, the giant killers are lying down saying, go on, Giants, you can have it.
It's weird. It is a strange phenomenon, but I guess you can understand it. And it will work for Steve Bruce because his kids, well, he played one 16-year-old, didn't he? They held their own against Arsenal. So it's not a gimme.
It won't happen twice.
Yeah, that's my thought.
Yeah, you know, if you look at Manchester City, you know, they made their feelings really clear, didn't they? What about the Champions League for them? Is that the only show in town for them? Can they actually do anything and win a Premier League title again?
I can't see it. I mean, you know, they're just too far back. They've got a game in hand, but you know, they're just. And the thing is, I've never seen a side with such good players switch off as often as they do when games aren't won, and the midfield goes walkabout. You know, they leave gaping gaps there, and you know, they just don't look like a team that will win the title.
You can't write City off because they've got Aguero.
Yeah.
But
he could get you 10 goals in five games.
Of course
he could,
and they could go on this amazing winning streak, but they would be the worst champions in memory because they've got a dysfunctional midfield. It hasn't worked all season. And at the back, they've got ageing fullbacks who aren't playing well, haven't played well really, and a centre back combination that's very questionable. So if they won the league, they'd have to weigh Sergio Aguero in with a massive new contract just to say thank you very much.
I tell you what, I think football would cry. Yeah. You know, if Yaya Toure won a winners' medal this year and Leicester didn't get anything, it'd be terrible.
It would kill what has been a beautiful season if Manchester City won it, because they are the least deserving.
Yeah, and that defence is like watching people juggle nitroglycerine, isn't it? You never know when it's going to go bang. Is that Pep's priority when he comes in next season? He's got to sort that out.
No, I think his priority is the midfield. I mean, you know, games are won and lost in midfield. You know, defenders, as we've seen from Leicester, they're the cheapest and easiest players to get, and you just need to organise them. Yeah. Not many people are organising them very well, to be fair. He's still got company. He's got more miles on his legs than a 29-year-old should have. But he's a great organiser and a great leading presence there.
He's a manager in the making, isn't he?
He is, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, that midfield, that where the huge holes there, that's where he needs to fill. He needs to get someone in who can...
There'd be a massive cull. It has to be a cull. I would say four of the current starting 11 would survive. Top midfield for sure. He needs more players. He needs fullbacks that can get up and down. That's the trademark of his team. And he needs to take the weight off of Sergio Aguero. So, yeah. But I can see, actually, an entire new midfield at City next year.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in that defence, you know, we're talking all the time, it seems, about John Stones going there. that realistic?
Well, yeah, I mean, City have been briefing that they're going to spend £150 million on three players. And obviously Stones is the most obvious one in that group. You know, he'll want to be playing Champions League football next year after the Euros. And Everton resisted last summer. They've got a new investor. But I think City will be a more attractive proposition for Stones than Chelsea. Yeah.
And I think we got a little glimpse at the weekend about Pep Guardiola. I don't know if you saw the footage. After that 0-0 draw against Dortmund, he went into Josh Kimmich, who was, you know, really good young defender, basically had Marco Reus in his pocket, and he absolutely went mental on it on the pitch.
Did he? I didn't see that. Look, he's got a hard side to him, for sure. He's not just a stylistic coach. He's got steel, and he does not accept or tolerate second best. I think we know that, given his record and from what players that have worked with him have said. So, no, Pep Guardiola will improve City dramatically. That's why it's so important for Arsenal, Leicester or Spurs to take advantage, because this is the year where City are poor and where they shouldn't really be in the hunt. This is the year to win the title.
Well, there may be another year of opportunity, because it might take him another season to rebuild a little bit. You know, he might just spend a load of money and it'll click right away.
Yeah.
What about Bilic as a coach? Slaven Bilic has really impressed me this season. And West Ham, it seems they're in form at the right time. We're talking about potential top four and also potential FA Cup winners.
You know, at the beginning of the season, everyone was worried about West Ham, and Bilic had come in. He had a reputation for being a bit semi-detached, you know, not a 24/7 manager. Okay. And people were going, oh, you know, this might be difficult for them. He's turned out it's better than anyone could have imagined. And he's a great character. You know, last week at his press conference, after the Tottenham game, someone said, you know, can you get in the top four? And he, like, sort of pulled a face and thought about it for a good, like, 10, 12 seconds and then went, don't want to think about it. And, you know, and that's unusual for him, because once you ask him a question, like, he just starts talking and he can't help himself.
He's a great
He just loves football.
He loves it. You wouldn't think he loves it from his animations during a game. He's in agony, isn't he? He's up and down. But I love that. You want to... I mean, Manchester United fans would like to see a bit more of that, wouldn't they, from Louis. He lives and breathes it. But inside that kind of manicness about him, he has got a real football brain, a football mind. He sees things quickly. And what I love about Bilic is that he's decisive. If something isn't working, he won't dither over it for 10, 15 minutes. He'll change it there and then. And 8 times out of 10, it seems to have worked for them this year.
There was a great moment against Tottenham when Collins had to come off. You know, so he had to put on Reece Oxford. And he was standing there in his big coat, Bilic. And as Collins come off, he whipped his coat off and threw it down. I thought, he's coming on himself. You know, it's he's just got that air of enthusiasm about him.
And he knows a player. I think, you know, one of the hidden gems of the season has been Michael Antonio.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, there's someone who's come up from non-league. It's a sort of a Jamie Vardy type story, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Not even their owner knew what he looked like a few months back with a dodgy tweet. But everybody knows who he is now. Yeah, look, it goes to show, if you give these players a chance and don't write them off after one or two appearances, just stick with a player, then they can turn it around. Football's such a confidence game, and some people just need a few weeks or months to find their level. And now he's comfortable with Premier League football, Antonio. He's powerful, he's clinical in front of goal, and he is a major asset. He's been a great find.
And by his own admission, he needed the confidence boost of Bilic taking it to one side and say, look, you'll be all right, arm around the shoulder stuff.
Yeah, without doubt. And Bilic is, you know, he knows how to handle players like that. But what amazes me about West Ham is the number of attackers they got. They can switch it round, change it up. They can do their approach from delicate, you know, sort of a forward play, passing the ball in, to lumping it in and causing havoc. You know,
I'll tell you who's been important for them. He doesn't get a lot of credit. Coyote. He's an all-rounder. He can sit in that midfield.
Yeah.
He can be a box-to-box if you need him to be. And he's also been a centre-back lately and hardly put a foot wrong. Having guys like that, I think, allows Bilic to have an extra attacker on the pitch, because you can trust Coyote. I think Coyote, he wouldn't look out of place in any team at the moment, as would a number of the Hammers players, really.
So given all that, they've got to be favourites against Manchester United in the FA Cup, haven't they?
Well, it's still going to Old Trafford, and you know it's yeah, they're going to be favourites.
I'm glad you saw sense.
Yeah, let's hope so. You know, I mean, again, another thing I'd hate to see Van Gaal picking up a trophy just because he's got lucky and played the kids out of desperation. You know, it'd be quite nice to see someone like West Ham win the cup.
And do you think they've got that chance?
I do. Yeah, why not? I think tactically, we've talked about Bilic and how strong he can be. And you need a bit of that now. You need to think on your feet in cup ties where things can change very quickly. So I could see West Ham, if they can get past Man U, then obviously they can win it because they'll be in the last four and potentially they could get a good draw. So, yeah, West Ham or Palace are live threats this season as underdogs, I'd say. And, yeah, it would be good to see it, but I'm biased. I'm looking for an Arsenal three in a row.
Yeah, well, you know, bad loss for Manchester United at West Brom. You know, a typical silly red card that we had a few of this weekend. They've really got their season on the line, it seems to me, when they're playing Liverpool in that two-legged Europa Cup tie. That is a game they cannot afford to lose.
Oh, yeah, in many ways. It's, you know, while it could be the tie that saves Van Gaal's Man United career, it's also, you know, it's hospital pass. And the same for Liverpool as well.
Do you think if they win the Europa League that he'll keep his job then next year?
Yeah, I think he will. I think Ed Woodward is so confused by events, let's say, that he probably would. You know, but, I mean, whichever way this tie ends up, the loser's season will be, you know, will have just seemed like a crushingly bad one. And, you know, it's a festival of hate over two legs. You gotta love it!
And are Liverpool up for that?
They should be. They got lucky, I thought, against Crystal Palace. They didn't play especially well. And they didn't do very well, did they, against Manchester United in the league game, or either league game, actually. Martial caused them a lot of problems. Matter too, as they got a good record in this fixture. So no, I would probably make Man United favourites over the two legs just because they're a bit more solid. You just don't know what you're going to get with Liverpool at the moment. It could be your 3-0 against City where they're in blistering form, or they could be a complete mess.
Well, you do know what you're going to get with Liverpool. It's carnage at set pieces, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, it's any free kicks or corners, the opposition celebrate like they've scored. You know, against Palace, you know, there was three of them that obviously the goal, which you know, Firmino scores at the other end. Well, by God, you know what? He didn't want to charge down that ball, you know, in his own area. He was having none of that. But you know, they also had Scott Dan won an uncontested header from a free kick, and then Adebayor at the bar. They need to get more organised. I asked Klopp about it, and he said, "Well, no," he said, "you know, they only scored one, and we've been worse."
That's all right. Then. You know, I think this is a massive test, actually, for Jurgen Klopp. He's had one look at Manchester United in this fixture already. Didn't really get it right, if truth be told. His team were quite flat that day. The performance was well below par. Can he change things up? Has he seen something? I think we'll find out a lot about him as a tactician, because these two-legged affairs, I think the managers actually have a bigger role to play than in a one-off cup tie.
You know, he denied it after the Palace game that he had one eye on the United. But, you know, leaving Sturridge and Coutinho on the bench, you know, that suggests that you're thinking, oh, you know, I know what's important. So I'm expecting a huge performance from Klopp.
You're what, let's say, a keen student of that football club, Tony. Yeah. You know, over many years.
Yeah.
What's your feeling about Klopp?
Well, you've got to give him a bit of time. But I expected a bit more from him in the early years. I expected him to take Brendan Rodgers, the players who'd worked under Brendan Rodgers, and expected them to improve them, because that's what you expect better coaches to do. And they haven't really improved. They've had high spots where they've, you know, they've blown City away, the Southampton, you know, and all that. And then they've been so flat on other occasions. And they got very lucky against Palace. You know, so the Palace lost conviction and dropped too deep. The forwards never squeezed Liverpool, and they invited them in. It might be Klopp's new tactic is to play with 10 men, get rid of his highest paid player, James Milner, and they were significantly better then. But in all seriousness, I think we need to see more signs of his ability.
What about, in hindsight, again, you know, they didn't put John Flanagan into the Europa League squad because he was considered to be too bad injured at that time or would take too long to come back. He, to me, is the sort of heartbeat of a traditional Anfield player. Local lad, likes a tackle, very bright.
I think he is a proper old-fashioned defender, and he's one of my favourite defenders. If I was a manager, I would have a fullback like him in my team because he just loves defending, and the modern fullbacks don't particularly like defending, which I just find remarkable. I think he's great. He's going to make a big difference to Liverpool now that he's fully fit again, because their defence has been woeful this year. And obviously, Moreno isn't the best defender on the other side. So with Flanagan, it kind of balances it out. You can even shift it across to make it a back three of sorts when he's there, because he can play centre-back as well. He's come back in the nick of time, and I've got a feeling that Klopp really likes it.
Yeah, I think putting him in the Europa League squads would have been too soon. I mean, Adebayor went across to him yesterday, and in the first 20 minutes, basically, Adebayor was brilliant. Put him under a lot of pressure. He come off early, so you suspect he's not back to his best. So maybe it's just as well he's not thrown into a game like Man United, because as well, he might have that. You know, we've seen it from Steven Gerrard. You know, the mentality, it's United. Yeah, get in there. Yeah. You know, and let's face it, you know, every Scouser's dream is to score against Man United. Every Scouser's second favourite dream is to get sent off against them.
Right, and it's a strange week, because actually the Champions League tie, you know, it's a great tie, Chelsea against PSG, but it's almost taken second billing.
Is there a game, man? I don't know.
Yeah. Now, you've got David Luiz saying, I'm going to war. Now, I'd love a night out with him, because he seems to be a bundle of fun, let's put it like that.
Wow.
Are Chelsea going to lose out again against PSG?
I don't fancy them, I've got to say. John Terry looks like he's going to miss out, which I think is critical for them. Look, I think it's six or seven, well, since they kept a clean sheet, Chelsea. Can they really keep out PSG, their strike force at Stamford Bridge in this one without John Terry? I think that is the big stumbling block. I see maybe both teams scoring, but ultimately PSG progressing, because PSG are the better side.
I think it's all about Hazard and Costa.
Okay.
If Chelsea need to score. As you say, they're not going to keep PSG out, so they need to get goals. Now it's time for Hazard to step up and prove he's a top-class player on the European stage. Costa's looked revived, let's say, since Mourinho went.
It's a strange one, that, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know what? One of the things that this Chelsea squad, there's plenty in them who'd love to emulate the sort of Di Matteo year, you know, when the caretaker manager goes on and wins the Champions League, because they'd love to give a big two fingers up to Mourinho.
Let's look now, and probably intrude in private grief. The North East relegation.
Okay. Now, that's not grief, that's comedy.
You know, we're here now on Monday. We're not quite sure what's going to happen with Steve McClaren. You don't have to be a genius to work out that he's probably going to get replaced. If he does go, David Moyes, Nigel Pearson, the two frontrunners, who would you consider?
Oh, it's a tough one. I think if either was to turn it down, Where what job are they holding out
for? They won't
turn
it down.
I don't think so, no. I think both would be a fairly safe pair of hands, to be perfectly honest. I think David Moyes is a very good manager, very astute. The problem is that they're not safe. They are probably... Well, they've got a very, very good chance of going down this season. So you've maybe got to look at who can bring them up, and then you would probably veer towards Nigel Pearson, because, A, I think he would love to manage a club like Newcastle, and, B, I would fancy him to bring them straight back up, because he's sought out that defence, and that defence is what will cost Newcastle if they do succumb.
Yeah, basically, it's a four-team league, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you look at Newcastle's fixtures, they've got Leicester next, but then Sunderland in the derby, and Norwich. Their fate's going to be sealed one way or the other, isn't it?
They're the relegation playoffs for Newcastle. I mean, the problem is, for anyone taking over that job, it's almost impossible. You know, you can't win at Newcastle, no matter who you are. You know, if you sent in Guardiola, he'd struggle with the way the setup's there.
Why?
Well, you know, so managers have no choice.
It's dysfunctional, isn't it? You know, the whole management structure is.
You know, Graham Kerr's... As Marseille over the recruitment, and some of his choices are funnier than his son. You know, and there's a mentality there. They don't want to win. What do you want to do? The idea is to finish about 10th in the Premier League every year, pocket the money. If any players are successful, sell them on. Don't want to win the FA Cup, don't want to win any cups. And that catches up with you. Yeah. And manager after manager, you know, I had some sympathy with Purdue. I have some sympathy with McLaren. You cannot win there. It's the most dysfunctional
club. I think you can. I think you can win if you start from the back. Just start. Most teams that survive start with a solid defence.
That's the Sam Allardyce way, I think.
Yeah,
isn't it?
You're applying the sort of rational
I'm looking
sense
at it
to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there is no sense at that club.
No,
it's a madhouse.
It might be. Yeah, it is a madhouse, but it requires a very astute coaching, somebody to get that team playing as a team, and that is the problem. They've got great individuals going forward, but not enough organisation without the ball.
Right. If we take as read that Aston Villa are going down, it looks like Norwich are sleepwalking with them to go down as well. Sunderland, have they got enough about them to stay up?
Well, I mean, they've got Allardyce, and he is a great organiser. And even in games they've lost, like at Chelsea, when they were 3-0 down, they got themselves organised and played quite well. Too late. I think if they stay up, it'll be by dint of Newcastle and Norwich's failings rather than their own abilities. Mm.
So let's finish with happy thoughts, OK? Who's going to win the title?
Well, the happiest thought for me would be Arsenal winning the title, but I can't sit here and say with any certainty that's going to happen anymore. It's a big, big gap. So give me a tenner. I'm sticking it on Leicester right now.
Tony?
Leicester? I mean, it would be the greatest story in Premier League history. And let's hope it happens.
Well, a week ago, I would have said Spurs, but now I'm a believer. Leicester for the title. Thanks for joining us here on Life's a Pitch.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.